At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This podcast looks a little bit different than normal podcasts. This one was filmed live at MagicCon Las Vegas 2025, very recently.
Yeah, so thank you everyone who showed up to the podcast, and hopefully we'll be able to do more of these in the future.
Let's get into it.
Wait, you're supposed to be in the middle.
Hello, hello.
We already sat down. It's right. Keep the motion.
Already here. Okay.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
How are you?
How is everybody today?
Good, good. Wow, there's so many of you here. I'm going to face you guys.
This is going great. Yeah, back up a little bit.
Back up.
Wait, wait, Dylan. Now I want to be in the middle.
All right, now we'll switch. We'll do the switch. Yeah, this is fine now.
But I'm going to
still move the plane back.
You know what? I don't know.
Can you two switch too?
You guys are, yeah, you guys switch.
And I didn't even get my notebook either. Okay.
We have a notebook.
We have a notebook. We're okay.
Yeah, we're good on a notebook. MagicCon Las Vegas. Thanks everyone for being here. This is the first ever, yes. Round of applause for yourself.
Yeah, all right.
This is the first ever podcast live that we've ever done. We've never done this before. We film lots of podcasts, and we cut a lot of the dead silence out. So bear with us. Appreciate you for being with us in here today.
I do a lot of work throughout the week.
Cam does a lot of work. Takes him a whole week to edit this thing normally.
The bar is very high. You have to be a more gracious audience than Dylan's adorable two dogs, Jack and
Joe.
Normally
they're beneath us.
Normally
I say something in the beginning. This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Normally I would say there's an affiliate link, but today Dragon Shield booth is here downstairs, where you can get Play-to-Win sleeves right at the booth or right there.
And that's
cool?
Super freaking cool.
Yeah.
It's like so you can do that. Link, like
a verbal affiliate.
Yeah, if you walk up to them
like,
and say http://.
They'll know what you mean.
Yeah, they'll know exactly. Yeah. And you go, that's the 5% off code.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They won't look at you crazy. All right, so what I have here is a list that's called Play-to-Win Pod. Oh, wait.
You got to do the intro. Welcome to the Play-to-Win Podcast.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Welcome to the Play-to-Win Podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
You go next.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Dylan. You messed me up. I'm Dylan. This week we have a list of cards that has been given to us by, I'm not exactly sure who. We have maybe Greg?
Wizards
gave us the list of cards. We're going to talk about these cards in reference to CEDH, obviously.
Yeah.
And of course we will be ranking them, but we have not seen this list, so we have no idea what's on it.
We have no idea what's on it. Yeah, I just know that it's called Play to Win Podcast Live.
All right, so we got the right list. That's a good start.
Phew.
Hopefully.
All right. So our first card that we're going to talk about, are these in alphabetical order? No, no spoilers, Cameron. No spoilers. All right, here we go. Our first card we're going to talk about is Armageddon.
We should read what the cards do.
We should read what these cards
do.
Armageddon is 3 and a white for a sorcery that says destroy all lands.
That's
Ravages of War. I'm confused.
Destroy all lands each player controls, or
what do you mean each player controls?
We're looking for the each player controls. Armageddon. I feel like, all right, so I have thoughts right away.
Hit me with your thoughts, please, Dylan.
I feel like this is a type of card that is a perfect example of if you have not quite played a ton of CDH, you think this card has got to be good because it's disgustingly powerful in bracket 3 and 4 and 2 and all of the others. It's very strong. It's thought of as like the main thing that we don't want to see in casual pods. So obviously it should be good in CDH, but it's not. Right?
It's really not. First of all, I think a lot of it is based around the difference in mana that CEDH and EEDH has. Like,
yes.
EDH as a format, casual commander, is way more focused around lands and playing things like Farseek and other land ramping effects because there's like this...
The unspoken rule.
It's now a very spoken rule.
Now it's spoken.
Now
we're spoken about it now through the brackets.
It's a loud
exactly.
Rule.
Yeah, the brackets have kind of made it like very obvious that this is not something that we're trying to do in most games of EDH.
Right.
But in turn, what that means in CEDH is because we're not focused so much on lands, we're focused on other sources of mana, which are mostly in form of mana rocks.
Artifact mana, or like mana dorks, Gaia's Cradle. Although, Armageddon would be good as Gaia's Cradle.
You know what? As Gaia's Cradle gets better and better.
But you also
play mana rocks, though.
I want my Gaia's Cradle to stay around. I don't want to throw my Gaia's Cradle.
You want your Gaia's Cradle?
I want it, yes. I don't want Armageddon in a way.
Okay. So then you also got to run something that gives it indestructible.
Oh, okay. So we're playing Armageddon. You just 8 mana Avacyn and Armageddon. Oh, wait, but then we
no,
can't play Gaia's
that,
Cradle.
What's that?
Doesn't sound like Exalted Deeds? Isn't there's that combo that used to work with Mutavolt? That was that big artifact that could make Mutavolt an angel. Because Mutavolt was an angel, now you couldn't lose the game?
Sure, that's going
Who
off.
Who remembers
a,
this? Does anyone remember this from Standard? It was a Dungeons and Dragons card.
It exists.
Yeah, it exists. It was a combo that happened, yep.
Armageddon, also, the 4 mana isn't so much mana. At 4 mana, many other cards do much more powerful things or, like, are very powerful in your game plan or straight up win the game, right? Like, Smothering Tithe is a super powerful engine that's going to stick around for the entirety of the game, give you a ton of mana. Armageddon is going to set you back, and in the past, Armageddon has been used alongside attacking creatures, like an Elvish Mystic that can be pumped up with your Lord or something. Urdum Geddim, the old decks. That's what they would use. You would use, like, the clock that you establish afterwards to kill your opponents. But when the clock is 120 life amongst your opponents, that's, like, way more hard to do with Armageddon.
Yeah. Is this a thing? If you play Jettmere and also play Collector Oof and just get so far ahead on creatures and say, no one has mana anymore, I'm going to Armageddon. And now you
No,
have...
it's not a thing.
No.
Cameron.
The core of the argument is
Tyler,
still the same.
Why?
The core of the argument is there are so many mana sources that aren't lands that this is not going to wipe all of your opponents out. So even if you can get around the mana denial yourself, you're still not going to benefit enough from it to justify running a 4 mana sorcery in CDH, which is also ironic because it's the only format in which, like, the social atmosphere of, like, no, you just play what you think is good is enough that you wouldn't get unfriended by everyone you play it against.
It is kind of a bummer because Armageddon doesn't really have a home, right? It's too strong for any of the casual pods and too weak for CDH, or does it have, like, a firm home in...
Its firm home is Vintage Cube now.
That's true.
Because white weenie decks are actually decent in Vintage Cube. You can build out your board, and there's only one other player, right?
Okay. I'm kind of curious. Does anyone have any success with Armageddon in casual? A little bit? Okay, so...
Armageddon Heroic
One out of all of
you.
And it was one of these out of all of you. Okay, so I think
But that was not many.
He just volunteered that he was the villain. Like, just unquestioned.
Yeah, just like...
He admitted!
I'm going to give this one a firm zero, I think.
Because it it's historically not really been something that's in CEDH.
We could, so the rating system, we could explain it nicely for Tyler. Which
I would appreciate that.
I would like to explain it to me, too.
Yeah, for you, too. So all right, we'll stick with the normal rating system. 5 is a CEDH staple that goes in every single deck. This is, like, saved for, like, Sol Ring, basically. And maybe Chromox and Mox Diamond, although recently I've been seeing some chatter that maybe those cards don't belong in every deck, and I just saw your eyebrow go, that can't be right, and I kind of agree. But 5 is that. 4 is this goes in most decks. This is a CDH card. This is Into the Flood Maw or Chain of Vapor, although maybe those cards are a little 4-point something, right? But those cards go in just about every deck. 3 is it's a good card in a certain deck. It's going to be playable in that certain deck, but it's not overarching really that powerful in other strategies, right?
Displacer King. Displacer King. In Atali and not very good in a lot of other decks.
If you're playing blue Atali, Displacer King is a firm 5. But
as we learned yesterday.
And then 2 is like, this is a fine card in some decks. It's playable, but it's cuttable. It's not the best, but it's not going to drag your deck down. And then 1 is like, not a CDH card, really. Like, if you wanted to, I'm not going to stop you, but I don't think it's going to improve your win rate at a 1, right?
This is a slightly adjusted list than what we normally do, because normally 3 is when it's in one deck. Three.
And then we have 1 and 2 that are that bad?
Well, because there's a lot of bad cards.
Good thing we make
up
this list on the fly every time.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm going by for right now.
All right, that sounds good. So, and we're giving Armageddon a dead 0 because it's...
Well, we can't give everything. We can't do any repeats, right? So maybe should we give it like a 0-point something?
Oh, we can't do any
Why
repeats?
Why can't we do repeats this time?
So we can rank them
Guys,
evenly.
Guys, usually we get at least like 2 cards in before you start doing decimals.
Okay, just 0. Let's just start it with a 0.
We'll start with a 0.
I think it's a firm 0.
All right, that sounds good. Okay, all right. All right, should we talk about another card?
I would love to.
Because I asked them to give us like 20 to 25 cards.
Nice.
So we got a lot. I know.
Good thing we spent 8 minutes on that first one.
Good. Have you noticed that the pattern with the podcast is we spend 8 to 10 minutes on the first card?
And then after an hour, I'm like, I'm sick of talking.
I was like, oh man, this card. Oh yeah, it's a 2. All right, next. All right, Najeela the Blade Blossom is our next card. Najeela is 2 and a red for a 3/2, a legendary human warrior that says whenever Najeela attacks, you make a tapped and attacking warrior.
Whenever a warrior attacks.
It doesn't have to be just Najeela. You're right. I messed those words. and then you make a tapped and attacking 1/1 warrior for each attacking warrior.
Whenever, no, just for everyone, whenever a warrior attacks, you may have its controller create a 1/1 white warrior creature token that's tapped and attacking. So for each warrior, this will trigger, and then also for your opponents. Everyone knows what Najeela does.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Except me, apparently.
We know
except
in practice.
But me.
Like, spitting it out with magic templating, maybe a little trickier.
Yeah,
but she also has a Wooburg ability, though,
a Wooburg ability that says untap all attacking creatures. They gain trample, lifelink, and haste until end of turn. After this phase, there's an additional combat phase. Activate this only during combat.
Does it say what year Najeela came out?
It sure does. It came out in the year Battle Bond. Shoot. I don't know. When did Battle Bond come out?
Battle Bond was like 2017?
The copyright is 2018, okay. so roughly around there. Yeah, we'll say 2018.
2018, I would want to say. Okay,
I gave first thoughts on the last one. Do you have first thoughts on Najeela?
No. First, I want people, if Najeela is your main commander, raise your hand.
All right, we'll only insult one person. Okay, great.
Cool. All right, so if you leave, we'll know we did something wrong.
Okay.
What do you think about Najeela right now, today in the CDH metagame?
I think right now I feel like I see a lot less of Najeela than I'm expecting because it is still a very good five-color deck.
Yeah.
But I think that people that want to play just like five-color good stuff are interested in switching to the new five-color good stuff every time. And like, now there's Terra. And
right, now they're on Terra,
Sisse's been Ascendant.
Yeah.
Sisse's activations too, so it's just so much harder to interact with the Najeela. But I think, especially for newer players, a commander that has a built-in game plan, like a plan B where you just attack people to death, is a very good thing to have. And it also makes it a deck that operates reasonably well under stacks because as long as your commander is out, you're going to be able to do something to
just
advance.
Keep attacking, right? You just keep moving.
I'm pretty high on Najeela still.
Yeah.
Like, we don't see it much, but I still think it's a very good commander.
I think you have a good point that a lot of the times five-color pilots are the type of player that switch on in between different things a lot. I think that makes a lot of sense. I would know, and I have played a decent amount of five-color decks, and I'm playing Terra right now, and I'm not playing Najeela. My big issue with Najeela, especially in this mid-range heck, we can say hell, maybe? Mid-range hell? I don't know.
It's a place,
it's
right?
A place. So it's a place, yeah.
It's a proper noun, so I think we're allowed to say that.
I feel like Najeela, the board gets clogged up really quick, which is, although funny, because Timna is still really good, but Timna is good because Timna is in Timnachrom, a good color, a four-color good stuff deck that Timna is a backup plan. So I have found that Najeela just doesn't connect quite as much, and I don't see it actually doing the Najeela thing. You're just doing the other thing, the Breach thing, the Ad Nauseam thing, which is a good thing. But right now, I feel like Terra kind of provides something really cool for the Underworld Breach strategy of, like, Stitcher Supplier in the command zone, kind of. Like, not exactly, but, like, I've been leaning more towards that recently. So although we have been talking about the Bant core recently, the core of Derevi and Gaia's Cradle and untapping your lands and this like blue-green slash sometimes white or sometimes red strategy of just like Gaia's Cradle. The deck is Gaia's Cradle. Mm-hmm. And like when I think about it on paper, Najeela sounds like it could be good for that because it's an army in a can and it makes your Gaia's Cradle good. But I don't know if in practice it'll make enough creatures quick enough.
Because I guess you can use the infinite mana to put into Najeela activations, but you already have to be in an advantageous spot for that to work out.
Right.
Like, it's not like Thrasios where you just put your infinite mana into Thrasios and then no matter where everyone else in the game is, you can just draw your whole deck
you
and win the
game. You can press that button on your opponent's turn. This one you have to be in your own combat, right?
Although Najeela's not seen as much play right now, historically, like, Najeela is 7 years old now. Did I do eight years old?
At least something
seven
like that.
7 years old?
I know when we got into CDH, this is the first deck that I took to a tournament, and it was, like, one of the very popular. I feel like it was a very popular deck.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Ago, right? But we've gotten a lot of tools since then. And like you said, there's a lot of other things. And even outside of Terra, like the Wandering Minstrel is also another five-color commander that we just got.
Yeah, that I think is also like maybe really good.
Certainly
I think it quietly might. I don't want to say it's better than Terra because I love the play style of Terra. But if your brain is big enough, I think the Wandering Minstrel is actually like really good.
So
but,
not us.
So not, maybe you, not me, though.
But considering that Najeela still has a lot of historical CEDH, you know, gravitas and weight.
You're going to grandfather in a few points.
We should give Najeela a couple of extra points, because this is all of CEDH, not necessarily just the meta right now.
And not necessarily TEDH, because TEDH, tournament EDH, where you're focusing on, you know, a timed round, or draws are worth points, it makes the game very different. And I think Najeela, although the combat damage, I feel like Najeela is a little bit worse in the TDH, whereas in the we're doing CDH, we're playing our kitchen table, we're just all trying to jam, maybe Najeela's a little bit better there?
I think you'll also, in kitchen table scenarios, find more decks that allow Najeela to get in because they're not trying to have Timna in the command zone for every single deck, right?
Yeah.
So I think that specific metagame also really can hurt or help Najeela, depending on what you find.
I'm going to give Najeela at least a two. At least a 3, maybe. 2.7.
See, this is tough because our
as a
scale,
commander, it's a different than your normal scale.
I was
scale.
Just thinking true. That, yeah.
Right. It like, doesn't go in it. Well, it goes in maybe some medium Sisse decks.
Every Najeela deck plays this
every,
card.
That's, okay, that's the first step. Every Najeela deck so, plays yeah, this card.
Yeah. All right, so that's a certain percentage. I'm going to give like Najeela a 2.5.
2.5. I was leaning towards 2.7.
If we're talking like on the scale of like all CDH commanders that I see, I'm gonna give it a solid 3.
Solid 3, okay. 3.
Solid 3. What is that average to? I'm so glad I'm not
2.7. doing that. That's gotta be like a probably 2.7 or something.
Oh, good lord.
Right? It's probably like.
Wait, what did we give it?
3, 2.5, 2.7 has gotta be like 2.7 a little.
Say 2.7 no, because we're gonna do averages based on feel.
Oh, I'm so sure.
I gotta trust my gut on this.
Yeah. I think that'll go way better.
Cameron, okay. Really, all right, so it's better. So far we have Najeela and then Armageddon as far as lists that we were given to talk about at MagicCon 2025.
Okay,
yeah, there on CDH. Okay, what's number 3?
I think we're at 100% so far.
This is going great.
All right, here we go. Demonic Consultation.
Okay.
This is a black mana for an instant spell.
I
that
love
says,
how you're taking this as a challenge every time to remember.
I am.
The whole
card. Oh, I'm going to do great.
There's
too.
No way you get this one.
So I'm not going to get it verbatim, but the gist of it is that when you cast it, after it resolves, you name a card, and then you reveal cards from your library until you reveal that card.
And already wrong.
Hold up. I'm not done.
Finish phrasing it right.
I'm not done, yeah. But if it's within your top 6, you just lose the game immediately.
Gone.
Because you can't stop if it's in your top 6. It says it just like that on the card. But you can't stop if it's in your top 6.
Says it just
you
like that.
You just lose the game.
It's just written like a rambling, tired person, how they would write it.
Which, honestly, like, the oldest Magic cards, a little
that's
bit.
That's how
like,
they
if
feel
you ever read, like, Dance of the Dead, like, the original
someone
wording,
who was really
like,
tired wrote this out, I think.
You can't be confused reading alpha cards. They're so obvious, right?
Demonic Consultation. You want to go first on this one? What are your initial thoughts?
So, in case anyone doesn't know, this is a combo piece with a card called Thassa's Oracle, which is a little known card in CEDH that.
Can I quick
we got
pause.
Some booze for Thassa's Oracle already.
Can I have a quick tally? How many people in here have never played CEDH?
Ooh.
A lot of you. Wow.
Wow. Okay.
How many of you have never watched Play to Win? Okay. Oh, one or two. Great. Oh, okay, wonderful. Thank you for coming.
Thank you guys immensely for
okay,
being
Okay, so
here.
So there are a good chunk of you who haven't played CEDH, but everyone, how many of you don't know what Demonic Consultation does? Everyone's, all right, next.
I just
well,
said
perfect.
What it does, though. Like, beautifully. How is anyone still confused?
This guy's not even listening. Get him out of here.
Yeah, you're in the front row.
Okay, good. I just wanted to get an idea of who we're talking to.
All right,
to.
Well, let me break it down a little bit more. So Thassa's Oracle is one of the most notorious win conditions in all of Magic the Gathering now, where for a blue mana and a second blue mana, if you have no cards in your library, I'm doing great today.
You're doing great.
Yeah. But basically, it's the most difficult way to interact with as a win condition because it's enter the battlefield ability just says you win the game if you meet the criteria of there being a few enough cards in your deck to equal your devotion to blue, which is why it counts for blue and its mana value. In Demonic Consultation, if you name a card that's not in your library, like Tarmogoyf in your Grixis deck, you get to just exile your entire library so that your Thassa's Oracle can just win you the game right there.
Yeah, well said. My initial thoughts
Thanks.
Here, yeah, you got it great. That was great. For Demonic Consultation, I feel like for a very long time, basically, I kind of all of CDH's like main fame, because I feel like weirdly enough, Thassa's Oracle kind of brought CDH to popularity. Like it made an entry point really easy to understand. Of like,
right,
I get that combo. I know how
it's
that
like,
works.
Oh, it's not a weird flash line with like Breakfast Hulk and blah blah.
Right.
Blah.
Yeah.
It's
so
like,
I mean,
oh, there's
easy.
Two cards. Cool.
Perfect. Yeah. And I think obviously that has made it like it's the de facto of like this is what everything else compares to. This is a three total mana two card in combo that wins the game on the spot. You don't need anything else. So everything else kind of has to like compare to this. This is like the lightning bolts to Tarmogoyf in Modern of just like the lightning bolt has to get rid of the good enough creature for it to hit. Everything kind of has to think about Demonic Consultation and Thassa's Oracle for like to be as in the conversation of CDH. But I feel like recently it's like lost a little bit of popularity, and I don't know if that's just because CDH pilots are bored of playing it and they want to play more Gaia's Cradle and stuff like that deck. So you have a reason. Okay, my thought was, or it's just a little bit risky. We've gotten a little bit more tools. Exile your library is a little bit risky, mm-hmm. and normally when you're winning the game in CDH, you get to a point where you have such a dominant position, it doesn't matter what anyone does, you'll win over top, whereas this one allows you only for those quick wins. Sorry, I went a little bit over. What are your thoughts?
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to say, I think a lot of the reason that it's sort of fallen out of favor is that it's much easier to interact with than most win cons, and like you said, it is risky, and more we're seeing decks that are able to win through activations or through things that are effectively uncounterable in one way or another, kind of taking over the meta, and it's precisely because people hate getting blown out. If you like cast Demcon and exile your whole library and go, haha, and then your opponent like Endurance is your graveyard, then you weep.
You're out of the game. you weep. But if something like a Kinnan or a big mana deck, if you go for a win, a lot of the times you're like, okay, I will activate Kinnan 3 times, and then I have a Seedborn Muse in play, and now that kind of that win didn't really matter.
That's true.
So for like the style of like what wins games of CDH, I feel like that if you want to win after turn 3 or turn 4, there are a lot of strategies that are a lot better because the metagame is all centered around this, because all of our interaction is counterspells, because we have to have counterspells to stop Thassa's Oracle. So that's what the interaction is playing. So the decks that can go kind of around that and do a bunch of creatures and do a bunch of activations that don't care about counterspells, that makes those strategies like they get to attack the meta in kind of a cool way.
Yes.
Still, Demonic Constellation is still like 4+. It's still like one of the best cards in the format.
Oh, yeah. Whereas like many cards that are like explicitly in your deck to just win the game might do nothing in other contexts, Demonic Consultation is weirdly flexible where it kind of does do other things.
Yeah.
It is like your emergency shit button where you like press this button and you can maybe you'll have to exile half your deck, but you can go find a free counterspell that is going to shut down someone's win right now.
Yeah.
If you like mulligan and you go down to 5 or something and you have Thassa's Oracle, you like put it on the bottom, you're like, I know it's on the bottom. Now I can Demonic Consultation, get Thassa's Oracle from the very bottom of my library, and then just cast it, and it's a 1-card win con now.
Yeah.
So it has more uses, so it's not just a combo card, it still performs other roles at other times.
And I think that's important for combo pieces, for them to be able to lean into each other, right? Like combo pieces, like the Tainted Pact can find the Tainted Pact is not Demonic Consultation, but it's a similar card. The Demonic Consultation can find the Underworld Breach, and then when you have the Underworld Breach can recast the Demonic Consultation and find the Thassa's Oracle, and then you can use it to find itself, so I think that's part of what makes such a good card.
And it's never in the top 6. Whatever you want, never in the top 6.
Never.
And I do, honestly, I stand by the value consult. If you've mulliganed low enough, I had a game recently on the channel where I mulliganed to 3.
I was just thinking about this game, yeah.
And I Demonic Consultation for Mystic Remora, and I won the game somehow, right? Or it's like, there are situations where, like, sometimes your odds of winning are so low that just, like, consulting for Mystic Remora is your only shot, and it can sometimes get you there. Very flexible card. I give it, like, a 4.5, 6? Well, I don't know.
I don't think you breathed in enough to be confident about that number.
I really want to make sure everyone is understanding that I was thinking. I'm going to give it a 4.7. 4.7.
You know, we're live. We can do things like this to make it look like we're thinking and stuff like that.
Normally
you
cut out this when we're thinking. When we have to manually think.
That's
like
true.
This.
I always cut out our thinking, which means that there's never a lot of cutting out to do.
So just so I'm oriented here, 5s were like the Soul Rings and Mox Diamonds.
Correct.
And 4s were like the Chain of Vapors and like almost auto-includes.
Almost auto-includes.
Okay.
Maybe it's closer to 4.
Then this is like a 4.2 for me.
4.2. You might be right. Maybe 4.7.
No one talked about how...
I was talking about how it was so bad and then I give it a 4.7. So I don't
know. One talked about how you name Food Chain with it and then you exile your Food Chain piece on the way to find Food Chain.
That
and then you win the
is
game
very
with
cool.
It.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's Demonic Consultation is a 4.5 for me.
4.5 for you. Yeah, 4.7,
especially
4.2,
we're going
and then 4.5.
Historically, even like way before Thassa's Oracle, we had Laboratory Maniac.
Yeah.
And you could still like do the same thing with Lab Man. It was just a little bit more interactive, but it was still one of the best things that you could do in CEDH.
Even in the olden days, right? Demonic Consultation was used in like Necropotence 1v1 decks.
Way back when like Vine was around. Yeah.
I think even before Vine.
Even before Vine?
And Jace, don't forget, Jace, do you remember we used to cast a 4-mana Planeswalker to try and win the game?
Oh, yeah,
that
Jace.
That one came out after Lab Man, though.
It was better than Lab Man. I remember being exciting about it for all. Like, there was like a month or two period before it was like it existed without Thassa's Orc. And I was like, oh, this card's great. I'm like, oh, no, it's not.
What?
That's not even on our list. Okay, should we talk about
sweet summer children we were.
Yeah.
Let's go on to our next card. This is called Relic of Legends. This
a Sisse
is
card.
A Sisse card.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. This room really likes this card. Mm-hmm. This is a 3-mana artifact that taps to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool, but it also lets you tap an untapped creature you control. It has to be legendary creature.
Sisse card.
Because it's a relic of legends.
it says it. Reading the card.
Right, it's right in the name.
Oh, what? Reading the card explains the card? So that you can tap an untapped legend to make a mana of any color.
Yep.
And if you tap Kinnan, you only make one mana and not two.
Yeah, you stole Tyler's whole thing.
Immediately the most upsetting thing to me, of course, is that it somehow doesn't work with Kinnan.
It somehow, unfortunately, doesn't work with Kinnan. I want to talk about this card. It's a Sissei card. It's really just more mana for Sissei, but it's like perfect for Sissei. It makes a lot of the lines a lot easier in a lot of ways. You can do them a lot shorter, because if you use Sissei to go search for a legendary creature, then you only need four additional mana, plus the creature that you just got, to activate Sissei again and go find something else. So this is one that like isn't exactly a combo piece in Sissei, but when it's out, it sometimes feels like a combo piece, because it makes all of your lines just like a lot shorter, a lot more concise, and then it also just does exactly what you want to do in Sissei, which is just like dump your hand onto the board and make a whole bunch of mana. So
I
love it. I love this card, but this is firmly, I think this is like a solid three, even though I love this card, because this really only goes in like one deck, right?
No,
but that's not what threes are anymore. There are more decks. Changed that up. Now twos is that.
No, I thought threes was still.
No, it's please. A what I said it was originally, and then we changed it up.
Wait, what did I say three was?
You said three was like a displacer kitten, like something that goes in a couple of different decks. So maybe, which I guess.
But I think Tyler's about to say that I'm right in that it does go in a couple of different decks.
Okay, first of all, it does. Second of all, if you guys remember what the rating scale actually was, we're gonna need to know that. Except you weren't listening. We did. But okay,
it does go in more decks. Yes,
so,
tell.
Rog Thras and Dog Thras are both running these. And if you don't know what I mean by those, that's Rograk and Thrasios, which is a Gaia's Cradle deck that tries to put out a lot of small creatures and win with weird Gaia's Cradle lines, basically. And also Dog Thras, which is Yoshimaru and Thrasios doing effectively the same game plan.
Which and I just put together, actually.
Yoshimaru's a dog.
So much fun.
Such a good deck.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
Yoshimaru's a dog.
Yoshimaru is a dog. Good job, Ken.
Just because in case someone was confused about where the dog came from.
No, that's a good point. I sure didn't explain it.
Yeah, Yoshimaru's a dog.
But in both of those decks, you're usually going to play your commanders relatively early because they add to your value plan with Gaia's Cradle. And if you're planning on playing your commanders early anyway, then a lot of times this comes down as an artifact for three that can then immediately tap for itself plus one with Rograk or Yoshimaru. So it taps for two and then continues to tap, you know, on future turns. If you get Thras out, that's yet another mana. So it just has a lot of mana potential in the longer run if you're going to be playing multiple legendary creatures. So decks that do that are good for this card, and that's like Sissei in those two decks.
Dargo!
Basically.
This is a Dargo card. You sack Dargo and then it just makes one red mana that you need to cast Dargo again.
But yes,
yo, Dargo's making a comeback. Dargo Timna in particular, I think he's making a comeback. We have a patron that added it to our queue of decks to play, so that I know is coming up.
I honestly, this is, I think when we mentioned all those things that got a lot worse when Dockside left the format, although that was true, I think all of those decks are still really good. I think they lost a lot less than we initially thought that they were going to lose.
Yeah, no, the Dockside ban did nothing to CEDH, as far as I'm concerned for the most part now.
It didn't, I don't know about that, but it didn't make certain decks unplayable and certain decks really good. I think what it did is just shifted slightly what decks were good, because now the format is a little bit slower. It's like a turn slower without Dockside and Jewel Lotus and Mana Crypt and stuff. So I think that's what it did. It just didn't make certain decks like unplayable. Like I thought Sissei was done, and now I'm back on Sissei.
I thought
Atali feels great.
Was done, and now look at me.
And it's like, now look at you.
I'm on cloud nine every day.
So Relic, I think I am still with my current live definition of the 1 through 5 scale that we created. I think it is a three because it goes firmly in a couple of decks. Although I'm not playing it in Yoshi Thras. Maybe I should be. My list might be a little wrong.
I think
I'm wrong. Okay. But I'm still gonna give it a firm three.
I'm gonna give it a 3.3.
Okay.
I'm gonna give it a 3.7259.
No.
3.7259.
And we're not doing any take backs. We can't take anything back. So that's what it is. So Dylan, what does that average out to?
So the three ratings are 3, 3.3, and 3.7259. So that's probably 3.5-ish.
Okay, 3.5-ish. Okay. Now, what is our list so far?
Yes, very nice.
But I need them in order, please.
In order that we've talked about them, Armageddon at a 0.
No, that's not the order I wanted. I wanted the...
Oh, the height. Oh,
the
sure.
Rank, obviously,
the
rank
height?
In order.
The height or length?
Yes.
Which one?
I would like the height and the girth of all of
which
these.
Which of these cards is the tallest?
Yeah. Okay, so Demonic Constellation is at the highest. It's the tallest. It's 4.7.
Tallest, yep. It can ride all the roller coasters.
Yeah, Demonic Constellation's first, and then I think Relic of Legends is next at like 3.5-ish, and then Nigella is at like a little bit less than that, and then Armageddon.
My favorite part about this is that you are going to realize how hard it actually is to keep track of all of this throughout the course of the podcast, and there's going to be a little bit more empathy coming my way when I mess things up in the future.
Fair enough.
Okay, right. Should we talk about number five?
No, I want to give something away.
Oh, good idea. Oh.
Yeah. Nice. All right. First thing I want to give away is this pack of samurai sleeves from Dragon Shield, because these are super dope. And how are we gonna give them away?
I feel like to our friend over here who needed some help with the past Oracle.
Yeah,
right?
You need a lot of help. So yeah.
Just please
let me give you this pack of sleeves. There you go. Thank you.
That'll make, that's a good call, make them feel better about us razzing them. Sorry.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Now, if we, if you let us make fun of you relentlessly,
you might get something.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Cool. Now,
now I'm okay talking about the next card. The next card is Deflecting SWAT.
Ooh.
This is an instant.
We found something new of this card recently.
We did. Yes. Yeah. So this is.
You can target anything.
You can target anything. You can target a. Oh, you give it away.
I ruined his thing. So
back up.
All right. So Deflecting SWAT is 2 and a red. And it says that you can cast it for free if you control a commander. It doesn't have to be yours. And you can change the target of a target spell or ability to whatever you want.
You may choose new targets for spell or ability, but even if a spell doesn't naturally have a target, you may still say, I will change its targets. And that normally is irrelevant, but sometimes if you need to just cast a spell for Displacer Kitten or whatever, it can be a spell that you are allowed to cast and it doesn't need to have that target, which we just learned and made your Atali win much easier or something, right?
Yeah, so if you guys were here for the Scrybabies live episode yesterday, that was really cool.
Yeah.
And should I talk more about it or should I just say you should
enough.
Go check?
Okay, that was great. Yeah, that was great. Okay. This is like the other card that I think you play in Kitten, the 2-mana artifact, the 0/4. Do you know what I speak of? The creature that you can redirect?
Oh, yeah.
Spellskite?
Spellskite. Mm-hmm. This is the same, for the same reason that Spellskite can pay 2 life to target something that doesn't have a target, this is a similar thing.
I think just to make sure we're being clear, we do still have to have a spell or ability that is on the stack that you can target.
Oh, yeah.
You don't just, have like, to change it, to something.
Right.
And this also comes up a lot in another deck that I play, which is Timna Quirk, because in Timna Quirk, sometimes, actually, pretty often, you just want to cast a spell so that you can make treasures with Tavern Scoundrel. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it does. You just want to cast a spell.
It doesn't matter what it does. I don't care if it does nothing.
Oh,
I just
want to
cast a spell over and over.
It might be. It would be better if it did nothing, because then you wouldn't need a target.
Genuinely would be better. Yeah.
Ooh, that's funny. How good do you think that spell would be? 0 mana, and it was just a spell. It was just an instant. It did nothing. It was just a 0 mana instant.
This is a spell. That's all it says. This is a spell.
You don't think it would be good enough?
The only text on it is.
But if I get a card deck, you just want to cast it over and over again. Is it still not good enough?
Unless it says it returns to your hand, but which it certainly could not. That would be a busted card.
So like, if the card was too good. If it was didn't do anything, it was just said this card returns to your hand. Oh, that's just like Infinite Storm. That's kind of boring.
Yeah.
That's not even good.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. You only get Infinite Storm.
We'll
anyway,
revisit that later.
Anyway,
we'll
I cast Grape Shot.
Yeah.
Like
Deflecting SWAT, I think this card is really good. I think this is very close to at the high ends of 4 point something.
How many nines can you put on that paper?
I will give you 4.9, and then with the line over top of it,
the
represents
repeating,
infinite.
The
right?
repeating symbol. Yeah, that sounds great.
Is, which I think
that is the maximum number.
I think that's called an umlaut.
That's
it's not
word.
Called an umlaut.
No, that's a different thing.
No, that is a German language symbol, my guy. Though I actually don't remember what that is called. Does anyone know?
The infinite sign on top. Does anyone know any math people? What?
Bar.
Bar. That, all right,
wow,
it's boring.
Okay.
It's bar.
Wow, okay.
I mean, I love bars. Like, I'm
okay.
doing
I know the word bar.
So you're giving it a 4.999. I think this goes in every deck that you're playing red and your commander is like, I want to say like 1, 2, or 3 mana, but realistically, if it's 4 or 5, I still
see a lot of
it.
Commanders that are like 5 mana that also play.
Right?
I mean, Atali plays Deflecting
SWAT.
Play
yeah, okay.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Dargo, you probably like
Dargo,
still
you
play it.
But what's a deck you wouldn't play it in?
Okay, so I think a deck you wouldn't play it in is like if you're playing like Krom Kodama or something, where like you
have red,
but your commanders are.
Yes, yeah, you're right.
But there are very few.
There are very few, yeah.
Pour one out for all the Krom.
Are you giving also a 4.999 with the bar?
No, but I think I'll give it a 4.8. I think that's
4.8. I'm going to give 4.9. Just to make it a little bit easier.
All right, that sounds good.
This is still probably the best card that we've talked about, I think, though.
Well, I think this is going to change really quickly. Yeah, because the next card is Mystic Remora.
Oh, the best card in the format, you mean?
Yeah, okay. Really. Is this the best card in the format, or is another card better?
You're looking at the whole
list.
No,
we're not going to talk about the other card. I want to make sure we're not going to spoil that. Is Rhystic Study or Mystic Remora better?
That's such a great question. So first, we should say what Mystic Remora does.
You're right. So this is a blue mana enchantment that has cumulative upkeep, which, by the way, I've learned how to pronounce that word now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I know. I've come a long way. Thank I know, literate Cam. This is a new Cam coming at you for 2025. But only the
We're
second half.
Done with the year.
Only the second half,
the second half of the year.
It really upkeep, yeah. Yeah, so that means that every upkeep of yours, you have to pay one and then another, an additional one on the next upkeep, and then an additional one on the next upkeep, right? We all get that.
Yep.
So it also lets you draw a card whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell if they don't pay 4 mana.
4 mana is so much.
4 mana is too much,
too
arguably.
Much. No one can really ever pay.
No.
Except for some of the Gaia's Cradle decks. Gradle. Has anyone done that yet?
Gradle?
Has anyone done that?
Gradle? Is it made out of clay?
Oh, Gradle.
Yeah.
Okay. Mystic Remora.
Thanks.
I feel like I was talking a bunch of last one, but format defining card, what do you have to say about Mystic Remora?
Mystic Remora is incredible. I particularly love it because Kinnan is one of the decks that makes the best use of Mystic Remora.
Yeah.
Because really your ideal scenario with Mystic Remora is that you can keep it around for like basically the whole game.
Yeah.
And if you get a very early Kinnan, or God forbid, if you get to play Kinnan and play Mystic Remora both on turn one, that Mystic Remora is never leaving.
Never.
You just keep it for the entire game.
Yeah.
And when you have those kinds of games, I think it is better than Rhystic Study.
Yeah.
But the cumulative upkeep, if you're not in a deck that is able to outpace all of your opponents on mana relatively easily, does really add up, and you're not going to be able to hold it for that much of the game. So I think usually your best case scenario with Mystic Remora is you hope that I'm going to play it for one, probably on turn one. I'm going to draw maybe one or two cards from my opponent's playing stuff, but it's also going to like chill their turns out. They're not going to be taking really explosive turn ones, and so you're kind of buying yourself some time to try and get ahead.
Yeah.
Unless
yeah,
you play against Natali.
Unless you play against Natali, yeah. And I feel like the issue with the Mystic Remora is, though, you have to draw that mana to keep going. Like, you have to kind of draw a specific thing, because there can be games where you kind of, like, get locked up in your Mystic Remora, and you're just like, all you have for your turn two is a second land, and you pay to keep the Mystic Remora around, and you can't develop more. So every turn, all you're doing is, like, drawing a bunch of cards, going to discard, and, like, not doing anything with it. So you kind of have to find that, like, other aspect. Whereas I feel like Rhystic Study, its most common, like, comparison, you don't need that mana. You just need the Rhystic in play, and then once it's there, you're gonna be able to do stuff with the cards, right? Yep.
Both kind of require you to have either Sol Ring or Ancient Tomb on turn two.
Yeah.
Whereas Rhystic Study wants you to have one of those cards before you cast Rhystic Study.
Right.
Mystic Remora is okay with you having them for turn two, where you pay to keep fish around, and then like your land's Ancient Tomb, or your next mana casts the Sol Ring or something
right.
like that.
And like weirdly, like Mental Misstep is also a card that like it can hit Mystic Remora, not Rhystic. That really doesn't super matter, but there's just like one more little piece of something that does something about fish. And people are very excited to Mystic Remora a mental to sorry. People are very excited to Mental Misstep a Mystic Remora. They want to do that. They'll do that right away. But if they have to, like, Fierce Guardianship or Rhystic Study or something like that, I feel like they're a little bit more timid to do it, right? Because, like, when the target is so easy, like, what else is Misstep for? But when for Fierce Guardianship, it can hit anything, it's a little scary to hit the Rhystic Study when you know someone can just slam down an Underworld Breach the next turn, right?
Yeah, you'd rather hit the win condition.
So, like, Mystic Remora almost feels a little bit scarier, I feel like, because that reason, because it's a little easier to hit. But it also, Rhystic Study allows different type of players to manipulate. Like a creature deck can play around the Rhystic Study, whereas a non-creature deck can't really do anything into a Mystic Remora. Sorry, a creature deck can play around Mystic Remora,
right,
is what I meant. You can just keep on playing your spells while the other decks don't. All that to say, Mystic Remora is still like five, right?
There's one more thing I think is really important to say about Mystic Remora. I think this is a card that scales really, really well with how well you know the format and what the pod composition is.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know if the decks that you're facing are likely to actually play a bunch of non-creature spells, you don't really know how good this card is in your hand at the minute. Because if you're facing, you know, two Rockos and a Winota and you like play a Mystic Remora on turn one, they're like, I don't care. Like, this doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But if you're facing three, like, Rog-Sais that are all trying to have huge explosive plays, it becomes much better.
Yes.
So it is very swingy depending on context, and I think it's hard to play it effectively and know when to keep it in an opening hand without knowing the meta.
What was that pod that you said? Two Winotos and a Rocko?
What a
two Rockos and a Winota.
Oh, my God. Oh, two Rockos. Oh,
yeah, no one survived one of those and continued to play CDH.
No.
I can tell you that.
That's true, yeah.
Is there a deck that doesn't play Mystic Remora? Is there a single deck in CDH that says, no, I don't want that effect?
Not correctly.
I don't think so. So five out of five.
Five out of five.
Five
out of five? Best card we've talked about so far.
I think so. I mean, I think it's about...
You're not going to give this card a five?
I think it's about the same as Deflecting Sweat. I really evaluate
really?
It about the same.
Interesting. Okay.
You just said no one likes Mystic Remora more than me.
And wrong. I like it more than you.
In Kinnan. Sure.
Five,
in
five,
Kinnan, I will evaluate it.
It's a five.
All right.
It averages out to a five.
It's a five. I think it's the best spell in our format. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Our next card is called Thermal Flux.
I don't know what that card is.
I've never heard of this
card. Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm going to guess what it
it's
does.
It's got to be a blue
You all look
blue
it up, too.
Or red.
I'm not going
to
read
right,
it to
yeah.
you.
Yeah, so this is one, a blue and a red.
Is that what it is?
For
an
instant.
Up?
And it says...
Oh, we're guessing. Okay.
It says... Flux, like a flux capacitor.
Oh, flux. One... flux. Okay, no, I have it. I can say it? Do you want me to?
No, I guess. Yeah.
All right, yeah, it's a blue instant. It says choose one. Target non-snow permanent becomes snow until end of turn. Or target snow permanent isn't snow until end of turn. Draw a card at the beginning of the next upkeep. The next turn's upkeep. So not even the, like... If you take an extra turn or your opponent's an extra turn. This is, what's that blue commander?
Orvar.
This is an Orvar card.
This is only an Orvar card?
No permanent.
It targets a permanent.
Well, because who else is playing like the worst Mishra's Bauble you've ever seen?
Yeah,
like,
there's no other
It just,
really. Target non-snow permanent becomes snow. This is as close as we can get to target permanent, right? This is just for a blue target permanent.
Having the words snow permanent next to each other is so confusing because are you targeting a permanent or are you targeting snow permanent?
Snow permanent.
No. Oh, God. Man. See, what I like about this is now that I know I can't make that joke on the real podcast. I will edit that one out.
Thermoflux. This goes in one deck in a deck that I'm so sorry. Wait, any Orvar pilots? Great.
Orvar's way in the back.
Okay.
Nice.
Orvar pilots. Nice.
Orvar pilot, you get a pack of clear inner sleeves from Dragon Shield for playing Orvar. Come on up. Yeah, let's get this. Yeah, there you go. Thank you for playing Orvar.
Nice meeting you.
Wait, yes.
Can you come here for a
Thank
second?
Thank you for running here, too. Yeah.
Do you play Thermoflux in your Orvar deck?
I do, in fact, play Thermoflux.
Oh, look at this! All right! Nice, thank you so much. What was your name?
I'm Jerome.
Everyone give Jerome a big round of applause. Woo! Nice, all right. That was great.
Is that a one? It firmly sees play in a deck?
No, it's a two, right? It's a two because.
Oh, no.
It's a two?
What did I give it to? I don't even remember. I don't even remember what a two was now.
You were so confident in the beginning when you explained the ratings.
That's how my life is. I'm always very confident. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Though. Oh, my goodness.
I'm gonna give it a two. I'm gonna give it a solid two.
It's clearly seen play in CEDH, so we have to give it a two.
I'm gonna give it a 1.7, and it would be lower, except that I love that its effect is just snow. Like, oh my god.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Was this a Mormyr Vig hackball card? Like, could I change the word snow into, like, something?
No?
Target permanent becomes legendary instead? Or do all the hack cards make me change a color into something else?
Most of them are normally color changers, because that's what you want to do, is you want to change the color in hackball, because that... whether it's blue or green gives you a different thing.
And Hackball probably doesn't want to draw a card at the beginning of the next turn.
I don't think so.
What are you trying to achieve? Do you just want snow elves? Like,
snow elves, yeah. Ooh. I want to bring the Skyrim DLC to life. Yes.
Ooh, there we go. Okay.
Would you give this card 1.7? Do you have a rating for it?
I give it a 2, yeah. Because it sees play in CEDH.
Cool.
Okay. Yuriko, the Tiger Shadow.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. This is an awesome card. Yes, this is one, a blue and a black, but you'll never cast it for that. She's a legendary human ninja, and whenever a ninja deals combat damage to a player, you may reveal the top card of your library, and then each opponent loses life equal to the mana value of that card, and you can commander ninjutsu her into play for a blue and a black, and she's a 1/3, and I don't know the artist or her number.
But you got so much.
That was basically right. It's not a may. Her trigger must flip the top.
Oh, it's a must.
It's a may. But I think you were just saying what the card does. It must do that thing no matter what.
Okay, that's good to know. It's a must.
Yuriko is, I think, famously one of like the most, I don't want to say like flawed design-wise cards, but I know Gavin has spoken about how this card was maybe a little bit of a mistake and shouldn't have been able to commander ninjutsu in over and over again. Mm-hmm. Yuriko is a blast, and one of the commanders that I normally suggest to people when they're asking for, I want to get into CDH and what's a good intro-friendly card, I think of Yuriko when I think of that because it does what Magic decks do, which is just attack and play magic cards and stuff like
most
that.
Most of the time, I have a hard time distinguishing the CEDH Yuriko decks from the casual Yuriko decks.
They're like four or five cards off normally. Right?
Normally, it's just like, you're not playing Mox Diamond. Okay.
Yeah, instead of Thoracle Consultation, there's like an extra land and an extra turn spell.
And one more three mana ninja instead.
Yeah, that's a casual deck. And this is a good example of a card that, like, I feel like Yuriko kind of dominates Bracket 4. Now, this is from a CDH player that doesn't play a ton of Bracket 4, but I'm kind of just assuming that Yuriko is very good and popular in Bracket 4, whereas when it comes to CDH, it's not bad, but it's not in the top of meta games, right?
I thought it would be after the Dockside ban, after the Crypt ban, after the Jeweled Lotus ban, because it doesn't really care about any of those cards, right?
Yeah.
But it's turned out, and I think there was a little bit of validity.
Yes, 100%. And it has, I do see it in top 16s. It does show up, but it's not like a tier one deck. It's like a firm tier two deck, I feel like. Right?
I would say so, yeah.
I think so. And I think a lot of the reason for that is its game plan, which it's pretty good at, of making your opponents lose life until they're dead.
Yeah.
Like, that takes time.
Yeah.
And most decks that need to take time run a lot of sax pieces, and Yuriko doesn't really want to run a lot of sax pieces either.
It's kind of fair.
Some builds do, but it's a pretty fair deck.
Yeah.
Great for beginners. You don't really have to know what your opponent's decks are doing to kill them.
like, which is cool.
And the best part about it is you don't have to know when the good time to push is, because like that is a tricky thing in CDH. It's like, when is it okay for me to go for a win? Like, I can go on turn three, but all of my opponents left up at a bunch of blue mana. It's hard for me to tell when I should go for it. Yuriko doesn't really need to go for it.
She's always
just keep
pushing.
Yeah, just always keep pushing. Hold up counter magic, just keep pushing. Yeah, just keep pushing. Are you a DJ or attacking?
Just keep pushing, just keep pushing.
So I think Yuriko is great, but it's just a little bit fair, and it is like a commander that I truly love. I played the deck for a while, but I almost put it together recently. I got like 95 of the cards together, and I was like, I don't know. I just couldn't finish it. I didn't have
I've
the
lost
drive
count
to finish
as
for
to
reason.
How many decks you've done that with.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
Tyam's the most recent victim of this now.
I have 97 cards of Tyam put together, ready to go, and I just like I don't want to finish it. I don't know why. I just can't bring myself to finish it. But Yuriko, I still think Yuriko is great. Is it? Have we talked about other commanders? So Najila, we gave like a 2.7-ish. I think Yuriko is around the same area that Najila is, probably.
I'm gonna give Yuriko a 3 personally.
3, okay, yeah. 3. It has card advantage, so for that reason, I think it's better than Najila because I almost always like card. Well, that's not true because I like Sisse, and Sisse has no card advantage, and it really just kind of does the Najila thing. I'm gonna give it a 2.6. 2.6 for me. I still think Yuriko is really good, but its fairness is just not what I want to be doing in CDH. Every time I watch one of my friends wins games of CDH, it's like Cam, he's like doing 1,000 Italic things, or you're doing 1,000 Kinnan things, and Yuriko is just like, attack. Attack. Yeah. You know, it's just not my play style right now.
It's very telegraphed what you're doing. Like, you can't hide what you're doing in Yuriko.
Right, yeah.
Which is weird, because they're ninjas. I feel like they should be good at hiding.
They should be good at hiding.
But it's actually, that's actually
right.
A flavor
my
fail.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone knows my thing.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you give it a 3, 2.6. What do you have for Yuriko?
I'm going to go 2.
Great.
Regular 2.
Great. It's a 2. Just a 2. Wow, kind of low. Okay.
I do think Najila is better, to be honest, but okay. I just like Yuriko better, and I'm feeling capricious.
Oh, capricious is a fun word.
Capricious.
What does capricious mean?
Like a Capri Sun.
Like a Capri Sun. Yep. Ready to be punctured, full of liquid. Wow.
Yeah.
Capricious. That's what it's
strong me, fellas. Yeah.
All right, Life of the Loam is our next card.
Oh, cool card.
Do you mean Life card. From the Loam?
No, Life of the Loam.
No, this is a new card,
yeah,
actually.
This is a new card, yeah. It's going to be from the Blind Eternity set, and it's 2 colorless, and it does the same thing.
I have it pulled up here. Would you like me to read it?
No,
okay.
Because I'm going to do my thing.
Give
remember?
It to Life from the Loam, what does it do?
1 in a green so that you can return 3 lands from your graveyard to your hand, and it has Dredge 3.
That's true. It's 3 target lands. You must target the lands on the cat. But yes, you're right.
I keep missing like
little words, but
words.
Theoretically, it could be return 3
I'm
lands.
I'm so frustrated.
And
I'm gonna go cry after this.
Life from the Loam is one of my favorite casual cards for casual commander.
Yeah.
I have it in 2 casual decks, which is huge because I don't repeat cards in casual very often. But this is like one of the few that I would be willing to repeat because it's so good. I love the dredge, getting the land backs, hitting my land drops in casual is my favorite thing to do. I just want to hit my land drop every turn for forever, and this helps with that. But it doesn't do fun. I mean, Gitrog isn't really great right now. Is that the big issue?
Gitrog is not great right now. That's the big issue.
Sorry, any Gitrog players?
Sorry.
Okay, there's a few of you.
You know, they have way more hype than anyone else we've talked to so far. So we.
There's a playmaker. Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
Life and Loam's good in Gitrog, right?
Yeah,
all right, we know that's true.
Cameron, do you know the other two? We got 3 decks that Life and the Loam is good
in. Oh,
do you know the other two?
Are CDH decks that are real?
Yeah.
You sure? Oh, all right.
Corvold.
No one say the third one though.
Oh, that's we have
4. Oh no, we have 2 more.
Okay, all right.
What
let
are
me
the
guess.
Oh,
let me guess.
The new one, the bear. Lumra.
I said Cameron. What
oh,
do you
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Cameron.
I'm gonna guess Lumra. Lumra.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, that's
good job,
great.
Cameron.
That's right, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Okay. So Corvold, Gitrog,
who else?
Lumra, and then Tyler has 1 more.
Oh, Grolnok, your frog guy that you liked when he came out.
No, that's not a real CDH deck. No,
is
no,
it
no.
The new one we talked about?
The new
the
one, the Wandering Minstrel.
The Wandering Minstrel.
Yeah.
What does this card do for there?
Is it, yeah, what does this card
the
do
The Wandering
for that
Minstrel?
Deck?
So,
no, why with Life from the Loam specifically?
Oh, why with Life from the Loam?
Yeah.
Because Wandering Minstrel is also a land combo deck, and it is almost always using Lumra as a backup plan, sometimes even Gitrog, and doing some of the same things. So
you're really doing towns things with the Wandering Minstrel?
No, you don't
Gitrog
care about
Gitrog and Lumra,
towns.
Not towns. Frogs and bears.
It's because the lands come in on top. So usually you're trying to win with Aftermath Analyst and some combination of
The Shifting Woodlands, is that
Shifting
what
Woodlands becomes mm-hmm. a copy of, or I've seen a couple analyst, other things. Yeah. The, what's the land that when it comes in, it sacrifices something and it taps for three or whatever?
Lotus Field.
Lotus Field. I've seen some things with Lotus Field being good.
Yeah, these are all excellent. And Life from the Loam definitely sees play in Wandering Minstrel. Maybe not every version of the list,
yeah.
but a lot of them are just interested in filling the graveyard because it's going to work well with those plans, with the Aftermath Analyst yeah. plan and so on and so forth. So you want to be able to dredge, and often you want to be able to get your lands back in the graveyard.
I wonder if we're going to be going towards a world where land stuff is a little bit better in CDH, because recently I've been feeling we've been going towards a world where Simic, we talked about at the beginning a little bit, the Derevi's, the Bant shell is really good. This blue-green shell is really mm-hmm. good.
Now that we found that Ouroboro Breeze Caller exists.
Right, which is
by the way,
so insane.
I saw someone with an artist proof of that this week, and I'm like, that artist has been sitting on that proof for a long time.
Yeah, it's
and is so,
so
happy
now.
All of a sudden.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's really cool that I feel like we're getting a little bit of push with the Wandering Minstrel and with Lumra of like these cards that fit a strategy of casual commander that hasn't really been represented in CDH. Mm-hmm. Like, this land yeah. strategy, Tatiova, is cool, but hasn't really done anything, and now I feel like we have some things that, like, represent what Commander is to most people, which is that blue-green is really good,
yeah.
and in CDH, that hasn't always been, like, just, yes! Yeah. It hasn't always been exactly true, but I feel like recently, blue-green has, it gives Grixis, like, a pretty good run for the money of, like, the best shell, right?
And we've been getting a lot of land stuff. Like, there was a big land push in the Final Fantasy set, and just from the very small amount of things that we've seen from the Edge of Eternity set already, like, isn't there, like, some land stuff that's going on with that, too? Like, creatures that do stuff with lands? Like,
I know there's Shocklands.
The Shocklands are coming back, but, like, there was also some creatures that I think we saw already that said, like, this thing has power and toughness equal to the number of lands you control or something like that.
I didn't see that.
So
that sounds awesome.
I have a hunch. I mean, we just got these spoilers yesterday, and I was busy doing other stuff and not looking at my phone. Not playing a jousting game on my phone.
Not doing that.
So instead, like, I could see this card becoming more as we continue to explore more with lands in these upcoming sets. However, we're keeping an eye on this stuff, like, historically, too.
Right.
So, like, historically, Kitrog has really only been the deck that was playing this for the longest amount of time.
Except for, the ones, the recent ones.
These recent ones. So I want to give Life from the Loam a 1.5.
1.5.
1.5.
1.5 is low.
Yeah.
1.5. Okay.
1.5 is low.
Did we not give the Thermal Flux card more than that?
Well, we did. We can't
thermal
trust
what? It says draw a card on it.
Thermal
and this
flux
puts lands in your hand?
It's just three. It's Ancestral Recall.
But it's three
recall.
Lands. It's so bad. I don't want to draw three lands. You draw three lands and you go, this sucks. Yeah. I wish I had a different life.
Not one of the Loam.
Yeah. Not one of the Loam.
No.
You're right.
I'm gonna give this one a 2. I think it's a firm 2.
Put
Paseju back in your hand.
Paseju.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say 2.2.
2.2. Okay, 2.2. Never gonna look at these numbers again anyway.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
What's number 10 on our list?
This card is a reference to Naruto. And those of you who already know. Talon Gates of Madara.
Is it?
Yeah, because Madara is a character in Naruto. Oh. He's like one of the big bads in Naruto.
Isn't it from the Lord of the Rings set, though?
Who? No,
Talon Gates?
Madara?
No. Where is... Nicobolas lore, apparently.
Nicobolas lore, yeah.
And also,
I don't
thing
know
that you said.
Anything.
I don't know anything.
Oh, boy.
Which is why I think the Universes Beyond stuff is kind of fun for me, because I don't know anything about magic lore, and I don't know anything about Universes Beyond stuff either. So, it's all... Final Fantasy is just as new to me as anything that they make up from the other stuff, so don't make it What is this card? What do you...
So, Talon Gates of Madara
is a
colorless land. So, it does three things, really. It can tap for colorless mana. Well, it does four things, actually. No, three. Yeah. What? When it enters the battlefield, you can phase out a creature.
One thing.
One creature. Well, that's the first thing that it does.
Yep.
It does more. The second thing that it does is tap for colorless mana.
That's two things.
And then the third thing that it does is for a generic mana, you can tap it so that you can make a mana of any color.
Three things that it does, and obviously the most important things were those three things.
And the fourth thing is that for 4 mana, you can put it into play from your hand.
I was doing a joke because that's the most important thing.
That's the most important thing.
Talon Gates. I have recently, like I just briefly mentioned, put together Yoshimaru Thrasios, which is a Gaia's Cradle deck. And Gaia's Cradle, along with 6 creatures in play and Oboro Breezecaller, a card that says for 2 mana, you can return a land to your play, an untapped target land, allows you to, with Talon Gates, create infinite mana, phase out your opponent's creatures, and then draw your whole deck with Thrasios and win any way that you'd like to. Mm-hmm. There are other things that you can do with Talon Gates. It's obviously just like very difficult to interact with spot removal. If you need to, for 4 mana, phase out a Kiki Jiki target or whatever, it can help you with that.
Or even for 1 mana, cast your crop rotation and then go find it. Like, cool. It's a classic crop rotation package card for me now in a lot of decks.
Yeah, and I think it's been great. I mean, this is the first land that we have seen that has an ability that says you can just put it from your hand right into play, which is what made Oboro Breezecaller really good. Yep. No other land has ever done that for some reason. And I think the coolest thing about this card...
Because it's cracked, that's why.
Because it's incredibly broken. Yeah. But I think the coolest thing about this card is when you activate that ability, it's still in your hand. You're like, it's not going onto the stack. The land still is in your hand. So if you have 8 mana and you spend 4 of it to activate Talon Gates of Madara and your opponent does something to try to stop you, you can, in response, activate Talon Gates of Madara again with 4 more mana and put it into your hand. It's not like, it's not an enters thing, you know what I mean? It's just like you activate it and you show that your opponent that you have it, which also, that feels weird to me. And
that's just funny, yeah.
Not a lot of cards do that, so it becomes very difficult to interact with. I think this card is great, and I've been talking a lot for it. What do you have to say?
Wait, can I ask you something?
Yes, please.
So if it stays in your hand, right, do you still have to reveal it to show that you can activate it?
You have to reveal it, yeah.
Oh, it'd be so cool if you could just be like, I'm going to pay 4 and like, keep them in suspense.
Yeah,
like,
what is it?
Activate
a card. Yeah. What the heck?
And also another thing that we kind of mentioned is that this, with the Gaia's Cradle loop, allows you to make the infinite green. With the filtering ability, the for 1 and tap it to make a mana of any color, you can, after you've made infinite green, filter that green mana into all of your other colors, which is kind of weird that ability, which seems like the worst thing on the card, is actually really relevant, really good. You play this in Kinnan.
I do, yeah.
How do you feel?
Because I'm also running that loop, which
strategy.
Is very good. Yeah, that loop is nuts, and we touched on this before, but the loop is nuts in part because it's close to uninteractable. Like, you were saying you can just put it on the stack again, but the most key thing about having Breezecaller, Gaia's Cradle, and Talon Gates is that you do not need to cast any spells to go from there to infinite mana. Right. It is only ability activations, and, like, when's the last time you got trick-binded?
Well,
like,
I just got my Gaia's Cradle got bestatued in response to trying to do this literally right before we got here. So, yes, but there's a very small window of things that can actually do anything about this, right? And even if they do, a lot of times, if you have enough mana, they bestage you your Gaia's Cradle, you can just do it again. You can activate again and try to go through the loop over top of it, right?
Yeah. One thing we didn't mention, too, is that it doesn't come up a lot, but being able to phase out your own creatures defensively to stop them from getting Gilded Draked or Swords to Plowshared, like, this comes up a surprising amount, too. Like, sometimes you just want to say, I'm phasing out my own creature so that, like, I'm protected, and once we get back to my turn, I'm going to be able to go for it.
Yeah, it weirdly, like, prevents, like, if you know your opponent is on Toxic Deluge or something like that, and they always Toxic Deluge your stuff, it protects against sorcery speed removal. You can, like, I have seen players do that where they just, like, phase out their own Sissei, and then on their upkeep, when it comes back in response to anyone do anything, the win is right there or whatever. They can just, not Sissei's a bad example, but whatever. I don't think Sissei plays Talon Gates. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. Talon Gates is great and a new card that I think is helping shift the meta a little bit and push into that Gaia's Cradle world. So I like this card a lot. Do you want to rate it? I feel like I've been saying stuff first a lot.
I don't want to rate it. Someone else rate it.
Great. 4 points. I think it's a 4 point something. I'm going to give it just a 4. Too many points. 4.
I will give it a 4.1 out of spite.
I'll tell you what, I'll give it a 3. I'm going to change my mind. I am going to rate it. I'm going to give it a 3.9.
That's despite the other way.
That's despite the other way. And because I actually cut it from a tally pretty recently.
Okay.
I found it in my opening hand quite a lot, and there's a lot of opening hands that really need the green or the red mana right away, and it just felt like, although there are times where I want it to get rid of Dranith Magistrate, which is a huge problem for me, that card does not see a lot of play anymore.
That's true, and 4 mana is so much to realistically think about it as removal being the primary option for it.
Yeah,
to be,
exactly.
Right? I mean, like, you can just play it for your land
or
for
like,
turn,
again,
right?
The crop rotation thing, right, too, yeah. Right? But again, it wasn't coming up enough on an impactful enough thing for me to say, you know what, screw my opening hands and mana that I want.
Right, Talon Gates is so specific, especially those first 2 turns, you need to make sure that you have red, and 5 generic. Like,
yeah.
And Talon Gates doesn't always help with that. But I still think Talon Gates is really good. I do think it kind of has to go alongside that combo, though. It can't just be in your deck because it's removal. It kind of has to do something else broken alongside it. And
absolutely.
The fact that it's removal is like a bonus. Mm-hmm. Cool. Should we talk about the next card?
Okay, yeah. Okay. Should we interrupt this program for an ad break?
I would love an ad break. Yeah, okay. You want to advertise something? What do you got?
This is brought to you by Play to Win.
Oh, I thought you were just going to add up all the ratings.
Oh, an ad break. Oh,
yeah, you just got to add up all the ratings.
Yeah, ad break. We'll add it up. Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I think that the top card, the tallest card that we have right now is Mystic Remora. Okay. That's the best one for sure. Deflecting Swat is next. Demonic Consultation is after that. Talon Gates is after that. Then Relic of Legends, Najeela, Yuriko, Life in the Loam, Thermoflux, Armageddon. And I'm pretty sure that was all correct. I just did that mental math. That felt pretty
good.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. I'm surprised there's only one card underneath Thermoflux.
I'm surprised I'm not more upset with you two by now.
Yeah. I thought you would have stormed out of here by now. Yeah.
I've been trying to get you to storm out
this whole time. I'm storming out.
We've talked about 10 cards so far, and we have a half hour left. How much more time? How many more cards do we have? Can you give us a rough?
Do you think that this list has the same amount of cards? Okay.
Just tear it in half.
Tear it apart.
Oh, boy.
These are the same cards. Okay, that's okay. We have a half hour left.
That's true.
Wow, no, we're doing great. We'll be good. Yeah, we're gonna be good.
Okay, great.
Are you guys in a rush? I mean,
yeah.
Should we give out a pack of sleeves?
Let's give it a pack of sleeves. Yeah. Okay. Let's give out a pack of Play to Win sleeves.
How do we figure this out? Should we?
You know, I asked for a potato rifle so that I could shoot.
Oh, should we just throw it and hope that we don't harm someone?
All right. I am going to throw it. You know what?
Everyone keep your arms up. Yeah, just throw it.
This is so dangerous.
No, I do not
approve of this.
Give it some height.
Now you really whipped that thing.
Whoa.
Nice. All right.
Did you get it? Anyone get it?
Who got it?
Nice.
All right. Yeah. Now you're obligated to give it to a little girl at a baseball game.
Yeah. I've been saving this.
To a baseball game for only
this. This has to go to a kid at a baseball game. What's our 11th card that we're talking about today?
All right. Man, good thing we didn't give rocks to give away.
That's true, yeah. It was going to be rocks. I have dice that I want to give out. We're not going to throw dice.
We'll give those
at the end. Yeah.
All right, our next card is Gnoll Rod.
Oh, Gnoll Rod. I don't own this card.
It does nothing. That's a weird stat to throw out, Dylan.
It does nothing, this card? Wait, you should explain that flavor text, though.
Because it's a 2 generic mana artifact that says that activated abilities of artifacts can't be activated.
Mm-hmm. But what does the flavor text say? Do you remember?
It says...
It does nothing.
No, it does nothing.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
I think it's a very fun
flavor. Yeah, and if you're just not media literate if you don't get that.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with how I delivered that.
You're stupid.
Yeah,
that's
I don't make the rules. That's just how it goes.
What do you think about Gnoll Rod?
I think Gnoll Rod has lost a lot in favor. Yeah.
Stinker.
Big dumper, I think. With stacks not being so good anymore, and especially with Dockside not being around, I really don't want to be stopping people's mana, and there's not enough artifact-based combos for this to be something that I'm interested in. If anything, the 2 mana artifact that shuts down activated abilities that I want is Cursed Totem now.
Yeah, not of creatures, not of artifacts.
Because that one will do creatures and not artifacts. Yeah,
I think especially because of things like Magda, and although Gnoll Rod can be good against Magda, Cursed Totem is very good against Magda.
I think it's way better against Magda.
Right? Yeah,
because they can still make a bunch of treasures
and
have a Gnoll. A lot of Magda decks play Gnoll Rod.
Right.
Like, I say more, right? Because I don't know words. So... So I really don't like Gnoll Rod so much anymore, even though this was historically good in CEDH in a lot of times, which I think means that I'm going to give it a bit of a higher grade than I should because of that. Either way, I think Gnoll Rod is definitely not as good as it used to be.
The strength of Gnoll Rod that I remember is that Gnoll Rod you could play off of like an Ancient Tomb, and like in the early stages of the game, is that it was easy to cast off of colorless mana, so it wasn't like it was realistic to think that you could like use your Lotus Petal first, cast the Mana Dork, use your Ancient Tomb to cast the Gnoll Rod, and then be kind of ahead of all of your opponents pretty quickly and have other mana sources.
Because
you're on the play or whatever, right? But at least that's how I'm thinking about it in Blood Pod. When I played it in Blood Pod, that was the kind of thought behind it. But as CDH has evolved, at this point, I don't want to play any stacks pieces that don't also progress my game in some way, right? They also have to push me ahead. It has to be Opposition Agent because I get the tutor from it. It has to be Orcish Bowmaster because I can use the big creature and I have two creatures creatures that I can now sacrifice for value or whatever. Like, it's got to go both ways. And Nilrod basically does nothing to go both ways. Like, it's an artifact, so if you have artifact strategies, kind of, but it doesn't do anything to help you win the game.
And even now, like, there's less decks that I would want it in that used to want it in because we've gotten, like, the One Ring.
Right.
And I feel like there's a lot of things that you want to play artifact-wise now that
exactly.
we didn't have access to a couple years ago.
Yeah, the One Ring kind of helps out the same type of decks that would have wanted to be helped by Nilrod because, like, a slower Staxi deck would be interested in a card that would allow you to draw more cards as the game goes longer and longer, right?
Yeah. And on top of that, Dockside wasn't the only thing that got cut. Also, Mana Vault and Jeweled Lotus. So
yeah.
Other great artifacts that made it a little bit worse. And then on top of that, we were at a point for quite a while there where Underworld Breach was, I would say, probably the ascendant
recognition. Right?
You're expecting most decks to want to use LED to win. And when that's not the case, Nilrod suddenly gets a lot worse.
Right.
Now it's in the pile with the rest of the stacks that you're describing where it doesn't advance my board. And if your only goal as a CDH deck is to stop your opponents from winning without being able to win yourself, then you're usually going to succeed in stopping two of your opponents from winning.
And then losing yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And then getting a draw in a tournament.
I think, what's the green-white Elevir, that Enchantress that has shown some tournament results? I have seen some of those lists that play Nilrod, so that's one deck. Maybe I'm going to give this like a 1.5. It's not completely unplayable. It's better than Armageddon.
I think I just fully agree with you for once. I'm going to give it a 1.5.
Wow, look at that! So you guys are not considering the historical applications of this card at all.
I'm counting that, but now, how good these cards are now is where I'm leaning.
See, I'm doing a lot of the historical stuff, too, so I'm going to give this card a 2.5.
2.5?
2.5, yeah. 2.5, not a 0.5.
It appreciates that.
Specifically the fraction form.
Cam operates on vibes and provenance.
Vibes and provenance.
Not 2.5, 2.5.
2.5, yes, specifically.
So 1.5, 1.5, 2.5.
2.5, yeah. Okay. Yeah, all right.
Number 12. Should we talk about the next
card
on the list?
Let's talk about our next card on the list, yeah. This next card, I really can't talk about the historicalness of it.
No.
Because it's Gifts Ungiven. See, it's not even new, really. It's
just not new
to Commander, because it was banned for a long time. This is, oh God, can I get this? This is an instant for 3 and a blue that lets you search your library for up to 4 cards with different names, and then an opponent chooses 2 of the cards to put into your graveyard, and you put the remaining cards into your hand.
Yes, I think that's what it does.
I think that is what it does.
Notable thing, it's like intuition, so you need a target. You have to target a player as which player will be choosing the cards, right?
So not there that matters. Is the chance that a Veil of Summer can effectively counter this from happening.
Yeah, not that that really matters. And then also, the fun little thing is if you get less than 4 cards, like if you get just 2 cards, those cards just go right to the graveyard. It's double entomb if you want to just find 2 cards. I don't know how much it's going to come up, but that
if
is...
If you're playing extended,
not
that'll come up
yeah,
a lot.
Not never. Not it never. Has come up in Gifts Ungiven's past and before, I think. Weirdly, the 2 thing was one of the reasons why it was banned is that the fear of finding Unbarrel Rites Elishnorn or something was like something that casual players were very afraid of, and this card does that. That's not why we like it in CDH, but that is something that it did.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, I guess now that Iona is banned in Commander, it's a lot less scary for casual players
to have that
Unburial Rite set up to go.
Because that's
so.
8 mana that you have now spent to get any creature from your deck, which is cool for casual.
I guess
cool
you were really only getting a 1 mana discount on Iona anyway, which isn't really that good.
Yeah. I guess so, yeah.
Maybe it's the tutor thing. I don't know. Either way, I think this card has been really freaking good for CEDH.
Yeah, weirdly enough, I haven't seen it come up a ton, but tell me your thoughts on Gifts.
I like it in any deck that was basically plain intuition, just because it essentially does the same thing in guaranteeing your setup for Underworld Breach. I think it's just that there's fewer decks that can play it, that we're realizing that can play it. Like, I'm trying out Vivi right now, and I have it in Vivi because I don't care. I can go find Tandem Lookout, Ophidian Eye, Curiosity, and then Underworld Breach.
Sure.
And then I'll always have something to go with Vivi, but I also have the opportunity to set up other Underworld Breach piles for myself down the line, right? So, like, I'm not necessarily in love with it there, but I think it still has a lot of really good applications as a tutor and as a card advantage engine to help me continue to push through in a deck where I really want to keep pushing and casting more instants and sorcery, non-creatures, really. Any old non-creature, because they said that on Vivi for some reason.
Right. any non-creature, not instants and sorcery. Vivi's broken.
What a wild card.
Yeah. What do you think about Gifts?
I really think, like, you can get very much into the weeds on, like, the niche applications when it's better than intuition versus worse, but I think the bottom line for, like, broad application across most decks is just 4-mana intuition is still good.
It's really that
simple.
Yeah. And a lot of the lines will allow you to make that mana up later on because you're allowed to get an extra thing or whatever.
Yep.
So So yeah, I totally agree. But I do think it is firmly, if you're playing Intuition, you want gifts. If you're not playing Intuition, you maybe don't. I don't know that that's true. I haven't thought about every single deck in CDH.
I think there's some non-Intuition decks that can get away with gifts that I would need to do a little bit more of a deep dive into, because like there's just certain ways that you can set up two-card combos. We were talking about like in Thrasios Timna, like including gifts and Intuition into our deck because of the piles that you can set up with like Kin and Basalt Monolith or...
Savine's Reclamation helps bring them all together.
Exactly, right? Mm-hmm. And I think like that's an example of a deck where gifts might actually outshine Intuition, because gifts just like sets you up for the resiliency a little bit better by getting you additional cards to help you assemble two-card combos, as opposed to Intuition that requires you to either have the Underworld Breach three-card combo with LED and Brain Freeze already set up, or like forcing you to find like interaction where you have to find like three free counter spells or free interactive spells in order to do something. Whereas like gifts can also do that, but then also give you an additional free interactive spell if you're trying to do that as well. So I think that there are decks where gifts outshines Intuition, but there's more decks that I think Intuition outshines gifts for the mana value reason.
Just that three mana initial investment is just easier than four.
Way easier, So that being said, I think Gifts Ungiven is going to get like a three for me.
Three, okay.
Because I think it still needs to prove itself. And it does go in some of the best decks, but I've not been as impressed with Gifts as I wanted to be.
Yeah, I mean, Blue Farm is still arguably the best deck in the format.
Timnacrom, heck yeah.
Timnacrom, Blue Farm is still arguably the best deck in the format. And I think I most of the lists that I have seen recently have been playing Gifts Ungiven. And I think that's a good home for it. I think that's like the first home for it. So it is kind of strange that like it's like one of the best things that you can do in the best decks in the format and to only give it a three, but it kind of like it doesn't show up again until like a lot lower on that list of like best decks, I think.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say? Like it sees play in Blue Farm and then maybe in Rock'Sai, probably not, and then not a lot of the Gaia's Cradle
some
decks.
On it, but I just don't think it's that great.
It's a little slow. Like,
yeah, yeah. You have piles that can win, but they're so much more expensive, and Rock'Sai wasn't really hurting for ways to win.
Right.
To the
time. Exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty good at winning.
It does that pretty well. So yeah, I think I also am going to give it a three, but it's like a firm three. It's a very strong three.
Oh, it stands there straight up and it can't move because it's a firm three.
It's a very firm, abrupt
three. It's just right there.
Abrupt. What are you? How are you?
I will give it a weak, tender, floppy three.
Floppy three. A soft.
So what does that average out to, Dylan?
Three threes across the board, three with the bar on top. Repeating is what this is.
No, that's not what happens.
No, it is. I already said it, and so it's true.
And how does the floppiness affect that average?
What gives you this firm bar
on
top.
That's the firm bar on top.
You mix the two together.
Okay, yeah,
exactly.
Nice. All right.
13th card that we're going to talk about today at MagicCon 2025.
Ooh, no, skip the 13th card. We're going to talk about the 14th card.
Like a building, we're going to skip the 13th card due to luck.
Nice. I'm literally skipping that card. This is Neoform is the next card we're going to talk about.
Something fun with this card just came up with me today that is very rarely relevant.
So funny. Oh, my God. Yeah, so this is a green and a blue for a sorcery that says sacrifice a creature as an additional cost to cast the spell, and you may search your library for another creature that costs exactly one mana value more than the sacrifice creature's cost, and you can put it directly into play with an additional +1/+1 counter on it.
This card's very powerful.
I only got the +1/+1 counter thing today because that's the part that came up weirdly enough.
Yeah, that part came up with me where I neoformed my Yoshimaru into a Kinnan to get a Kinnan, but there was a Roxanne in play. Roxanne can make meteors that deals 2 damage to stuff, so I was able to have my Kinnan come in with a +1/+1 counter and
safe
from the meteor. Ooh. So it felt very good, especially because I had 7 treasures from Smothering Tithe and I got a Kinnan out, so it's 14 mana with Thrasios. Felt very good. My opponents had every interaction in the book. That was a game that they had Besage you for my Gaia's Cradle. Nonetheless, it was super powerful. Neoform is a card that once was like one of my favorite cards in the format and has dropped a little bit, but since playing all these Gaia's Cradle decks, it's a lot better now. What do you think about this card?
You, me?
Yeah, Tyler.
We have so many good creature tutors, so it does have a lot to compete with, but 2 mana is a very aggressively priced creature tutor.
Yeah.
So even though you have the restriction of it has to be exactly 1 mana more than the thing you're sacrificing, even though it's not going to be great in every situation, it's just so cheap for a creature tutor.
Yeah.
And if that can get you a game... What?
Right into play. What were they thinking?
So the decks that can make great use of this is an excellent card and something that they want to see in their opening hands all the time because it can be a kind of surprise victory out of nowhere. But there are a lot of decks that can't run it because they just don't have a great line where they're going to turn their thing into the next mana value up.
You need a birthing pod curve, really.
Yeah.
This was a big big thing in like, I played a lot of Birthing Pod in Modern.
Or Tassigar. You need your commander Tassigar. To specifically neoform itself into something.
Ooh, that's a good point.
That's where I feel like it sees the most play, when your commander goes into something that perfectly the deck wants, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like in a Yoshimar Thrasios, a Rog Thras deck, where you're like, you're willing to get rid of your commander because you just want to get anything. Yeah. Maybe less in Rog Thras, I don't know. But
well, I mean, still Rog. Any deck that runs like mana dorks, like if you're running mana dorks, this is something that I want, because I'm probably in a mana, or not a mana, but like a creature heavy deck in general. And when it can get you a uncounterable like Grand Abolisher, like if they don't think that you're going for Grand Abolisher, you go for Grand Abolisher, now there's nothing else they can do because it's just right there in play.
It's just right in play, there's no more time. I like that too, when they're not sure if you're getting rid of your mana dork, they don't know if you're getting Thassa's Oracle or Grand Abolisher, and they have to talk amongst themselves, and then there's a situation if you're in a tournament, they're going to start asking you what you're going to get, and you have to either figure out, well, I can't lie because I'm in a tournament, so I have to figure out how to either make an agreement, how much information do I give? We were talking about this the other day, that the fact that you're not allowed to lie in CDH tournaments is kind of exploitable.
That's so exploitable.
Because I can just ask you, are you going to win? Are you going to win? You have to tell me, otherwise you're a liar. And if you say yes, everyone, they're going to win. Like, it's kind of exploitable if you choose to do it that way, I think.
I think it depends.
Right? Maybe we just don't.
Yeah.
That might be one of those things that in theory that sounds like it works, and then in practice you're like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like,
every turn, everyone's asking, are you going to win? Are you going to win? If you say yes, everyone has
just
to start
over and over.
Everyone has to.
If you say no, then you can't win, or you're a liar.
Or you're a liar, and you're going to be besmirched.
Yeah. So it's kind of exploitable. The bluffing in CDH, I think, is fun, and I try to do that as much as possible. I find out for me that it's best if I just shut the heck up. If it's like when I'm talking to cops, just shut up. I'm not. I don't have to tell you anything.
Anything you can say will be used against you.
Right. It's going to be used against me. You guys can talk yourself in and out of circles and figure out what I'm going to get or not get, or I'm just going to shut up and just get what I get. Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I go to most of the time.
So what is new for
me? So what is Neoform a rating? I will give it high. I think like a 3.
Are you on Jeopardy? What is Neoform?
What is Neoform?
Yeah.
Neoform is 3.7. 3.7, I'll give it.
Whoa.
I think it's high. Is that too high, you think?
Whoa.
I think it's really powerful.
That is very tall, okay. Dylan. What do you, rather tall, I would say. Okay. I am going to say that
tall.
Neoform is a 3.1, I think.
3.1, a little short, man. Okay, and then what about you, Cam?
I'm going to give it a B.
A B. That one's a B. Like the bug or the letter?
Both. It's the letter B, but it has a stinger.
Can it be the letter B, but the B is the wing to the animal B, and then I will draw a B?
You know what? I don't care anymore. You can do whatever you want. Yeah.
Should we do another giveaway, maybe?
We should do another giveaway.
Oh,
good
that's
call,
a good
Tyler.
Idea.
The next thing we're going to give away are Dragon Shield Amethyst sleeves. Woo! Should I throw these again? How are we going to?
Does anyone have a B tattoo?
What?
I don't know. I'm trying
to
find
it. If anyone has a B tattoo.
What? A B tattoo? Oh, perfect. Can I see your B tattoo? I'll just trust you. You can have them. That looks like a B. Yeah, right? That's a B. Cam will come confirm with you.
I'm going to get a good look at your thigh as I come over here.
Yeah, go. Yeah, yeah.
That's a B.
That's a B. We got a B. There we go.
Matt, thank you very much, Matt. Round of applause for Matt. You guys are already doing that. We're doing great. All right.
You're stuck with them for just a minute. I'll be right
Tyler's
back.
Tyler's got a B.
He's got a B? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've also got a B.
All right, that's funny. All right, here we go.
So the next one we get to rate without Tyler, which is great.
Oh, this is going to suck
for
him.
I'm kidding.
Because the next card, maybe we should keep his mic on.
Oh, keep it in the podcast. Keep that stream in there. Okay, what's the number 15?
Didn't we say before we came on that if any of us peed, we were going to keep it in?
Yeah, we did. So I said that if I pee on stage, you keep it
we're
in.
We're keeping it in.
On stage. I don't care.
I didn't know it was going to come true. That's so great.
Okay.
All right, number 15. Seedborn Muse is our next card.
Woof.
Yeah. Woof. Yeah, I feel like we know Tyler would give this a really good grade anyway.
Yeah, well, Tyler gave it a 6.
Tyler gave it a 6. Yeah.
Why'd you give it a wrong? Yeah. That's not even an option, Tyler, stinker. All right, Seedborn Muse.
All right, so this is 3 and 2 green for a 2/4 spirit. Not a human. Looks really human-like,
human-ish,
but not a human.
Agree.
And, you know, the Forest Immel card looks way less human-like. That makes it way less confusing for me. And then you get to untap all of your stuff all the time. That's what it says.
Yeah, you get to untap all your stuff all the time.
All the time, yeah,
untap
exactly.
All permanents you control during each player's untap step. And it's a 2/4.
Yeah. Now, this does not stack. If you have two Seedborn Muse, you're right. It's not a trigger. You just untap. And it's not like you could even do anything if it was a trigger in the untap step. Because you can't tap the mana and then cast spells with it, no matter what.
Yeah.
That being said, any deck that has a mana sink in the command zone,
Thrasios or Kinnan,
and makes a ton of mana in general is going to adore this card and eat this up.
Yeah, this is kind of a specific one that, like, it weirdly it is one of the most powerful cards in the format, but it's still kind of like a 3-ish or something because it's really only good in Thrasios and Kinnan decks, right? Like, there's some other decks, but, like, you kind of have to have a commander that has a mana ability attached to it because if you're just untapping during each player's turn, realistically, in CDH, you gotta have something to do with that. You know what I mean? And having the mana from your commander is a really good thing. And with the Gaia's Cradle stuff, you already gave the card a 6, which is weird because that's not even an option. I don't know why you did
that. Yeah, I can't believe that you went that high.
But in the Gaia's Cradle.
What?
You gave Seedborn Muse. You weren't here, so you gave it a 6.
You don't remember?
Weird.
Oh, I know. I would give it a 6.
You were right. I'd be like, you would.
Thanks,
the one card.
You.
Yeah.
You knew I was F6. And you were like, oh, we'll just give the rating for it.
Yeah, exactly. Just with the Gaia's Cradle decks being so good recently, Seedborn Muse is like the king of the castle in that strategy of like allowing you to go way over the top and be very strong.
I'm sorry.
What do you already said a little bit of Seedborn Muse. Do you have
I
any
said
other
a
thoughts?
Little bit of Seedborn Muse. I don't have anything else. Like, what else is there to say about Seedborn Muse? Like, just read the card like and you'll see why it's busted.
It's like the green ad nauseum. If it resolves and it sticks around a turn cycle, a lot of times you win, although I'm editing a game right now where I had a Seedborn Muse and it stuck around, except I was playing Krark Thrasios, and there was a Yoshimaru Thrasios deck at the table as well, and they had a Smothering Tithe and a Training Grounds and a Biomancer's Familiar, which means every treasure was a Thrasios activation. And even with my Thrasios, my Seedborn Muse, my Thrasios activation still cost 4 mana. So they were still able to completely outpace me because even if I were to dare activate a Thrasios and draw a card, that means it gives them a treasure, which means that's another Thrasios activation for them. So it can lose to another strategy that's similar, right? But most of the time, if you resolve Seedborn Muse, stick it around for a turn cycle, you're probably going to be able to win.
Yeah, it's not bulletproof, but
you
it
basically
is.
Just said that it loses to the same thing.
It loses to the same
thing. It loses to other Seedborn Muse.
If you can make your own Seedborn Muse that does the Seedborn thing better, it can lose to that. But besides that, it's so good at just like finding ways to stay alive just long enough and make enough mana and then win the game.
That it can only lose to itself. Because the one thing with Seedborn Muse is it got better when the One Ring was printed.
Oh,
Seedborn Muse plus the One Ring is so good.
Way good.
Because now you have an option that if you have the Thrasios and the One Ring out and they can get rid of the Thrasios in response to Seedborn, that doesn't really do anything, where they can just get rid of the Seedborn or whatever, but it limits their options for what they can do to try
Although,
to stop you.
Sometimes I feel sad because I don't have something to do with the mana that I make with Seedborn Muse, and I have all these cards in my hand,
just
but
draw
I can't.
2, 3, 4, 4.
Cameron, I don't know if you knew this. You're allowed to just add it to your mana pool and then roll around in it.
I can like Scrooge McDuck in all my
you
mana?
Yeah, Scrooge McDuck in all the mana.
Oh, yeah. I should do that way more.
I'm going to give Seedborn Muse like a 4. Like a 4.2.
I'm going to give it a 6 as well.
Okay,
sure,
whatever. Doesn't matter.
I think we established it all, so let's do it.
4.2, 6, and 6. All right, nice.
All right, I'm going to go to the bottom of the list and work our way up now.
So what number is this that we're going to?
This is now number 20. Hold up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24.
24?
I counted 24.
So we're going to 24.
13.
But we skipped.
We skipped 13.
That's why there's only 24. Yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
We're at number 24 now.
So now, for number 24, we're going to talk about Dargo the Shipwrecker.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, sounds good.
Ooh, yes, we talked about Dargo already. I don't know that I know Dargo memorized.
Can I ask something first?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Was anyone watching our channel way back when I used to play Jessica Dargo?
Yeah?
Oh, that deck was so fun.
That deck was so bad.
They're partners, but it's still monocolor.
Yeah. The Dargo Shipwrecker, Dargo the Shipwrecker, is for 6 and a red, a legendary creature, giant pirate, that says an additional cost to cast this spell, you may sacrifice any number of artifacts and or creatures. This spell costs 2 less to cast for each permanent sacrifice this way, and 2 less to cast for each other artifact or creature you sacrifice this turn. And it's a trampling 7/5. For some reason, it's also that stuff.
It's so big.
So big, yeah.
And he's eating a lobster, but like not the way you should eat a lobster. If anyone's ever seen this art, he's just like crunching the lobster.
The arm right off of it. Right? Yeah, and it's probably a huge lobster, right?
Because he's
huge. He's at least 7/5, right? So he's like bigger than Shaq.
Is he eating a Hullbreaker Horror?
Because
the Hullbreaker, Shipwrecker.
Hullbreaker.
Brewbreaker. Yeah. Don't you
I knew there was a song somewhere.
Right.
In there.
Yeah, there okay, is. Yeah, you. Someone call. Actually, don't call Pat Benatar. Yeah. Whatever you do.
We talked about Dargo a little bit. Used to be better with Dockside. Still very good now. Still very broken. The fact that it counts for 2 less for anything that you've sacrificed this turn, which means once you get a loop going and you sacrifice Dargo with like a Phyrexian Altar.
Sure.
It can go again forever.
Is excellent. But this is also a card that is so good with Sacrifice and Burnt Offering. The same way if you've played Hoarding Broodlord Lines, where you find it, that goes and finds Sacrifice or Burnt Offering, which adds mana equal to the mana value of the creature you sacrificed. And this has such a huge mana value that most of the time this is getting played in a turbo context where you can make really great use of all that mana to do something super explosive.
Yeah, the issue is that it's a little bit glass cannony. If they do find a way to stop your thing, you've like sacrificed all your creatures and artifacts or whatever to make Dargo cheap and stuff like that. And I think that's part of the reason why it doesn't see quite as much play now. Also, realistically, just because Rograkh and Kark are also insanely powerful for some reason, so the other red partners that Dargo compares with are also just really good.
And it's hard.
It's hard.
It's just hard.
It's just a hard deck. It's just different. Like, it's just hard for your brain to count
it's
it, right?
Just, yeah, like, it's tough sequencing, I don't know.
And it doesn't go well with anything blue, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
We've been talking for so long. I'm sick of this.
It's just hard to play, like, for me. And that's a me problem. I totally understand that.
What do you rate it?
Well, for me, it's a one, because I can't play it very well.
I'm going to give it a one for solidarity, too. One
what?
For me. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm a scam. I mean,
if you don't give it a one, you're not in solidarity
you're
with
not
us.
Not in solidarity.
Ones,
how would you give it?
I'm gonna give it a 3.2.
3.2 is one. That's a one.
No, that's a 1.5. That's a $1.50.
Oh my God.
$1.50.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I'm probably switching my Timna Kark deck back to this because yes, it is hard to play Cameron, but it is still easier to play than Timna Kark. And in tournament EDH, playing Timna Kark that takes a long time. Yeah. It's not good.
Yeah. Kark's easy to play because when it just goes back to your hand, and then you go, "Ooh, pass the turn." Okay.
That's true.
That's easy.
That's true.
Yeah. I feel like also the Kark things. I feel like you have to tell your opponents, "Listen to me. You are dead. It's going to take me 45 minutes.
Please,
though. Please
believe
just,
me.
Please just concede."
Yeah.
Whereas with Dargo, you can kind of show them a little bit easier that
look,
no,
I'm
you are
do
dead.
This. Yeah. 50,000 more times.
You're dead right now. Yeah. What's the next card that we want to talk about today, Cameron? We can either talk about the 16th card or the 25th card.
I want to talk about one in the middle. I'm going to do one in the middle.
Okay. I'm going to put a question mark since we don't know what numbers it is because it's going to be hard to count.
All right, this next card is called Francisco, Foul Marauder.
The bird.
Ooh, sure.
The bird, yeah. Well, everyone's heard about the bird. This is a one in a black for a 0-1 foul pirate. Yeah, that's how bad he is. He's foul.
Foul.
And he actually, no, he's a bird pirate. Foul isn't his name.
Yeah, he's a bird pirate.
Wow, way to go, Cam. He can't block. He's an 0-1 with flying. And whenever a pirate deals damage to an opponent, you get to explore.
Yeah.
So this is actually a combo piece with Walking Ballista exiled to Agatha's Soul Cauldron, because Agatha's Soul Cauldron can give a +1/+1 counter to... Who are we talking about?
Francisco.
Francisco. And then Francisco can remove the +1/+1 counter because now it has the Walking Ballista abilities thanks to the Agatha Soul Cauldron. So you can ping someone with the damage, and then that triggers Francisco because a pirate dealt damage to an opponent. Right. So as long as you don't reveal the land, which you probably won't because you can A, set it up with like Mystical Tutor or something, or B, you're only playing 27, 28 lands, so you have a really good shot of not hitting one, then you'll put another +1/+1 counter back on Francisco, and you can just keep repeating this until the table's dead.
Yeah. This was one that I played a little bit. I actually had like a decent amount of like casual personal success with.
Oh, he has partner. That's
and he's got
why.
Partner. Oh,
yeah.
That's the most important part.
Oh
about
man,
him. He's got
he
partner.
Sucks.
Yeah, you're not playing mono black Francisco.
You're not playing mono black Francisco. Yeah. So you can pair him with Krom, and you have a good Grixis deck. Good Grixis deck, right? Where you have like decent card advantage in Krom, and like kind of a weird win condition in Francisco.
Oh, because Final Partying was also made that whole thing a one card
sure.
one con.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And then also this just being two mana, just like a two mana legend that you can partner with something else is sometimes just like that in itself is pretty good. It makes your deflecting swats and all of your things a little bit cheaper. I came off of this one just because it's kind of hard to compare with Rog'Sai, but I still think that Francisco is fine. I haven't seen it a lot lately, though.
I think it's fine. I think it is a question of, like, when you're doing the partner commanders, like, what is the thing you want in the command zone?
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, this is saying, what if the answer is that I want the winning combo to be in the command zone? Which is kind of the Thrasios thing, but Thrasios will incrementally get you there and incrementally provide value while also being the win outlet in the command zone, whereas Francisco is only win outlet, no incremental value.
Yeah.
And I think that's just not good enough.
We were kind of talking about that a little bit earlier today, even in this podcast. We were talking about, like, it's nice when Demonic Consultation can, it's a combo piece, but it helps you lead into your other combo pieces. Guy's Cradle is a combo piece, but it's still mana. It helps you lead into your other combo pieces, where, like you said, Francisco doesn't do that. It's just, it's an A of a B plus C, and that's kind of all that it is, right? The Explore itself which, do you know what Explore does? Can you recite what Explore does offhand? Because I have a hard time every time.
Yeah, no, I can too. This is just a you problem.
This is just a me
problem. You got it, Cam.
Cam, let's see it.
Make Dylan look like an idiot.
When you explore, you reveal the top of your library. If it's a land, you put it in your hand. If it's not a land, you put a +1/+1 counter on a creature, and then you can either leave it on top of your library or put it into your graveyard.
I think that sounds true. Nice. Yeah, good job, Cameron. Thank you.
Wow, three bows today.
Three bows. Keep it up. And narcissist.
All right.
I'm going to rate this one, I don't know, two-ish? Like, I think two-ish. I'm going to rate two-ish.
I'll say 2.2.
2.2,
okay. That's a two-ish, so still right.
And then for you?
1.9, which is also a two-ish, so that sounds good.
Okay, all right,
do we have time for another?
I think maybe we have time for one more, and it's 1:25,
okay.
And then we can give away our Cloud Precon deck box and let everyone know that we have a meet and greet at 3 at the Creator Central if you want to come hang out with us.
And that, yeah, we'll like sign stuff there, I think there's another show right after this, so we might have to fire out of here then.
I think that's true. Can I take a selfie real quick with everyone before that we do the final one? Okay.
You too.
No, I'm just going to sit that way.
Ready? Okay. 3, 2, 1, and another one over here. We get everyone. I'm going to try. Is everyone in it? If I can't see you, you can't see me. Okay. Cool. All right. Thank you.
All right. We have one more card.
Final card.
Blue hat with the glasses. Pick a number 1 through 25 that isn't 1 through 16 or 25 or 18 or 13.
19. 25, 24, 23.
I lost count. Cody, Codex.
That's a good one to end on.
What a great one to end on. So this is a 3-mana legendary artifact creature who's got some number of power and toughness.
1/4.
Yeah.
Sure.
An ample rump.
Yes. And Cody says you can't cast permanents, and for 4 mana and tapping Cody, you can add Wooburg mana, and then the next instant or sorcery that you cast basically cascades into another spell that you don't have to cast right away. You can cast it at any point on that turn. And that's the exact wording on Cody.
That's exactly it. I just want to clarify. It's for 4 and tap. That's what you must pay.
I got that right. Okay.
You got that right. Add Wooburg. That's also correct.
Got that right.
When you cast your next spell this turn, exile cards from the top of your library until you exile specifically an instant or sorcery card with lesser mana value.
I thought I got it mixed up because I said when you cast your next instant or sorcery, you flip into any spell.
Any spell, next instant or sorcery. Notably, until end of turn, you may cast that spell without paying its mana cost.
And I got that right.
And put each card on the bottom of the library.
And, crucially,
you may put each other card this way on its bottom of the library in any order, random order.
Oh, wait a minute, but you can't play permanent. Wait.
Yeah, you can't cast permanent. Cam did mention you can't cast permanent. I did say that. I am such a good listener. But it's specifically that you find the instant of sorcery, which will normally be the tutor, which is called
Profane Tutor.
Profane Tutor.
Because it's a 0-mana tutor that has suspend, which is why it works as a card.
Right, so with this restriction, Cody can't play Pact of Negation because that is an instant or sorcery that costs actual 0 mana on the card, because if it was, Cody could flip into it or something like that. So that's really the only real restrictions. You can't play permanents, yes, kind of, you know what I mean? But a lot of the cards in your deck have ways to get rid of Cody, or you're a storm deck. There's just not a ton of permanents, or the permanents that you play before the Cody comes in. There's also a couple other things that Cody can flip into. There's the Ancestral Recall and the Wheel of Fortune. That's not their names, but they
do. Ancestral Visions and Wheel of Fate.
That's it. Which are suspend cards that do those effects. Look at him go. Wow.
My waist hurts so much.
From all the bowing that I did.
Yeah.
Cody's great. I'll just say 5-color Turbo. It was a deck that I loved a lot for a while, but it's a little bit... Everyone sees it coming. They know
what to do. Remember when it won 2 tournaments in a row because nobody saw it coming?
No one saw it coming. And then once they see it coming, it's kind of easy to interact with because you know what to do, right?
Yeah, when your opponents have no idea what your commander does, like, you have a much better chance of winning. And so, honestly, you should just, like scribble all over your text box, you know, get an altar. Like, just don't. If they ask to see what your card says, I won't tell you.
I will just eat it. All right. But for my next trick, I'm going to eat this list.
Eat the hell list. Yeah, in front of everyone. Cody, although I do love the card, and I think it's super sweet, I personally enjoy another style of Turbo right now, Rog'Sai or Atali or some of these other decks that kind of They are a little bit more explosive, if that makes sense. Cody has to wind up. It's like a solar beam.
Like an old Henry Ford Model T.
Yeah. Sure, yes, exactly. We're like, yeah, Cody has to like load. We're like Rog'Sai or Atali doesn't really need to.
You can just Cody, like, Flow Rida?
load. That's pretty good. But yeah, so but I don't see it much anymore because I think it's just other decks do a similar thing. And also it's got the five-color thing. Five-color pilots maybe hop around a little bit more. Turbo pilots hop around a little bit more. And everyone knows what it does.
But with this mana cost, also one that definitely suffered from not having Mana Crypt and Jeweled Lotus.
Oh my God. True. Perfect cards for this deck. I remember when I was playing Cody, any hand that had Mana Crypt was basically keepable. It didn't matter. But if you got any other spell at all in your hand, Mana Crypt land with Cody was just like a lot of times good enough.
Yep.
I'm going to give this card...
I'm gonna go first because you're taking forever.
No, I'm gonna go first. It's a two.
It's a two. Cody, two.
I was gonna give it a five.
Two and a five.
I don't believe
you. Historical implications, and it did so much to CEDH, and to realize that like you can't just like not care about a deck at a table because you don't know what it does. Like this taught everyone in CEDH lessons for years.
You think?
Yeah. Don't underestimate a deck. You'll lose to it all the time.
I'm going down to 1.9.
Yeah, 1.9 for both of us. 1.9. Okay. That's it. What do we normally say at the end of the podcast?
We don't end well.
Recently, it's been shaky.
Shakily end.
For watching or listening.
If you like to support.
You guys know it better than we do.
Yeah, you guys do.
All right.
You know, we'll say thanks for being here. And as a thanks for being here, we have a Cloud X Soldier Final Fantasy Commander deck to give away. I think, this thing is literally priceless. So, do a what? A Kermit?
A scary Kermit?
Yeah. I don't know how to do a Kermit the Frog.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Any of that bubbly voice stuff, I feel like you got pretty good.
The only thing I know how to do is like Shaggy. Not like Shaggy is from Scooby-Doo, but like Shaggy, who used to sing the...
It
wasn't me or anything like that. Yeah. I wanted to walk into Mr. Bombastic, but then copyright issues and
it's all off on
us. How do we want to decide who we give this to?
I was going to flip a coin, but there's way too many people
yesterday I did this. Who thinks that they live the furthest away from here? Where do you live? What? Nebraska. Does anyone live further than Nebraska? Where? London? London's extremely far.
Farther than London?
Canada's far. I feel like London's further. What? Canada.
London's farther.
I think it's
love
London.
You, though.
London one. London going twice?
London.
Two Londons? Oh, all right. Yeah, London going twice to London.
London, thank you for coming out. Appreciate you coming all the way from across the
Thank you for coming. Enjoy the rest of your
time. Oh, my God, the accent's there. He's got it. It's London.
Nice.
Perfect.
Nice. Wonderful. It's proof. Meet and greet at 3 in the Creator Central. Dragon Shield booth tomorrow at 2. Thanks for coming.
We can't thank you enough for being here. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you so much for watching or listening. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Stam, Nandez, Cumulative Upkeep, MTG, Mr. Jerby, The Cardboard Cookbook, Penguin Man, 0089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fire, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Only Groupie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Scare Bear Garrett, that's fine, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Peter Stewart, Cornar Wild, Uncle Butts, Kwaja, Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on social media for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Major Tom.
John Koba.
The Gaming Kinkajou.
Dan the Man.
Sarcastic.
Roy Turner.
Bill Bob.
Mystic Muffin Man.
Zachary Coulson.
Jubaha.
Mace the Ace.
Dalton Poteet.
Justin.
Man Solo.
Jan Wildfang.
Thomas Bueno.
And David Nelson.
Thanks, y'all.
Woohoo!
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.